All right. Hey, well, happy Father's Day. My name's Daniel. I'm one of the pastors here. And I forgot to introduce myself, so I apologize for being rude. Hey, Talik. Good to see you this Sunday. So when we do our Pass the Peace time, there's one of those fellas from the youth group who goes around, and instead of saying, "Peace be with you," he says, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus." So I love that. I think that's great. So we're doing this summer series where we're just doing Jesus. Sound good? All right. So as we get into it and talk about Jesus, I want to talk a little bit about Jesus's family background. So in the Gospel of Matthew, he talks about this. So we're going to start today in Matthew 1:16. Now, Matthew begins in what may seem to be a super boring chapter with a lot of weird names at the beginning of that gospel. And so if you're not familiar with what's going on and some of the things that they're alluding to, it might seem boring, but it's not. And I just want to read the last part of it. And Jacob was the father of Joseph. So we got this line. It starts with Adam, I think, or Noah. I can't remember where this one starts. But it keeps going and talks about fathers and fathers and fathers and ancestors. And here we have the tail end of this from Matthew. And he talks about Joseph, the husband of Mary. And Mary was the mother of Jesus, who is called the Messiah. So what is it that you notice about Joseph that's different from the other ones? He's not called the father here. Here, we're tracing Jesus' lineage through Mary. Mary is Jesus' mom, and Joseph is her husband. It does not say that Jesus is the father. So in another gospel that does a genealogy, so let's look at how Luke does it at this point. Jesus was the son, so it was thought, of Joseph. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about Matthew's genealogy is that he alludes to a lot of different scandals. And it gets a little bit spicy in there. I think of back in an era, Jerry Springer television show. You remember that one? So there was a lot of like this crazy stuff happening on TV where people do all kinds of bad things to like highlight dysfunction, and there'd be fights and drama, and audiences loved it. But there was one guy who came along and had an idea for how to get an audience, and that was by, if paternity was in question, he would do DNA tests and then reveal live on air, not live, but on air in front of a live audience, whether or not, or how the paternity test went. His name was Maury Povich. Yeah, guys remember that at all? So he had kind of a catchphrase. There'd be all this drama, and it'd be like, is this guy the father, or is that guy the father? And then he would come and gather them in, and then sometimes he would break the news, and this was particularly difficult if somebody was supposed to be the father, but he would say, "You are not the father." And sometimes he would say, "You are the father." So here we have, Luke is alluding to it too, but Matthew's genealogy, again, is crazy. All the kind of scandals that he alludes to in there that are in like books in the Bible and the Hebrew scriptures. But here we have another scandal here that they're kind of alluding to. As Maury Povich would say it, Joseph was not the father. And again, so that's kind of the question of, okay, so if Joseph is not the father, what's the next question? Well, who is? Thank you. That's the next logical thing to ask. Well, who is the father? Well, fortunately, Matthew doesn't leave the scandal hanging for too long. He answers it with the Christmas story. So we're going to have Christmas in June. Sound fun, right? And get into what he says in Matthew 1:18. This is how the birth of Jesus, the Messiah, came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit. So who's the father? God, right? There's no earthly father. This is like a one-time, crazy, unique situation. We're not that naive. We know there's always got to be a father. But here, there's not a human father. So just think about how scandalous that could be. who was Jesus' father? He didn't have an earthly one. Now, at this point, I'm a little bit afraid, but I want to take just a side trip here. Is that okay? And I don't want to derail from here, but I think it's just kind of an opportunity to address something that I've heard some people talk about. But in the United States, our largest denomination, largest Protestant denomination, the Southern Baptist Convention, recently declared that churches that had female pastors were out. And one of their spokespersons says that female pastors are unbiblical. So at Meridian, we're very grateful to have a female pastor, aren't we? Yes, clap. So that's a really good thing. And there's a lot of things that we could say. The press on that is any church that has women pastors is unbiblical. Well, we don't think we are unbiblical. We have lots of Bible, and we could get into proof texts and all that kind of stuff, and we're not going to do that. But one thing that I'll just point out in it, a group may say that we're unbiblical here. That group was formed with a teaching that slavery was biblical, and those who were against it, abolitionists, were unbiblical. So any group that started, they don't say that anymore, but that's their foundation. So if they were telling us we're unbiblical because we don't believe that slavery is sanctioned, I can live with that. I can sleep at night because there's going to be lots of people say lots of different things about what's biblical and what's not. And so I'm A-okay. But my side note here is this sets up one of my favorite stories about early American, and because a lot of times women's rights and civil rights or rights for especially African American in the slavery days and then in the post-slavery days. But there was this woman preacher named Sojourner Truth. Did you know she was a pastor, a preacher? So she had this calling from God to be a preacher, and she went to this because they were advocating for civil rights and all that, but also women's rights too. At this point, women didn't have the right to vote, and she was going, and she went to this Christian gathering where they were talking about women's rights, and all these male patriarchal pastors stood up, and they made their arguments for why women should not be pastors, or women should not have equal rights. And one of the pastors stood up and said, men are superior, or should have superior rights because Christ was a man. So that was the argument. So Sojourner Truth took this in, took the microphone and said, who was Christ born from? And the audience was kind of silent. And she asked again, who did Christ come from? And nobody answered. And she said, Christ came from God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him. Yeah. As she dropped the mic and walked out. I was like, yup. Matthew and Luke say the same thing. Joseph was not the father. Jesus was not born of a man. It was different and unique. But anyway, so let's come back from that side trip and get back to Jesus. But we really want to be advocates for women and equality, and we're proudly and gratefully egalitarian here. And we, if anybody says that's unbiblical, okay. That's their opinion. But we hold that. We hold the scriptures, and we hold the equality of men and women and all of that, and we're grateful for that. So anyway, Sojourner Truth. Now we're going to go back to Matthew. So Matthew starts his story by giving us Jesus' family background, where he didn't quite come from a man. And then he goes into telling us the Christmas story, which we all love. And then he tells us about John the Baptist, who was the forerunner, who was chosen to prepare the way and talk about, get everybody ready to be the opening act for Jesus to come. So, and then we finally get to Jesus as an adult. And this is how he picks up. Then Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to be baptized by John. And that John is John the Baptist. We'll talk about another John who's a different John. John's a popular name. But this is John the Baptist. But John tried to deter Jesus, saying, I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me? Jesus replied, let it be so now. It is proper for us to do this to fulfill all righteousness. Then John consented. As soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, this is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Now, this is the voice. Now, think about Jesus growing up and what that had been like. Maybe there were whispers about his paternity. I mean, his parents weren't married when he was born, which was a little bit scandalous then. Was Joseph Jesus' father? No. Who was? So Jesus could have had all kinds of daddy issues, and there were all kinds of people that said all kinds of things about him. Believe it or not, not everybody liked Jesus or said good things about him. So there were all kinds of voices and people that said things about Jesus. But when the voice of God comes and speaks to Jesus and identifies him, it's really important to see what the voice says about his identity. What does God say about Jesus? And he says, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." That's what God said. That's what the Father said about Jesus. This was core to his identity, that he was a beloved son and that he was pleasing to God. A lot of us really struggle with this. Like, what is our core identity as we think about, like, who we are? Like, at the core, are we pleasing? Are we loved? What do we have to do to be loved? As we think about this, I want to think about you. What is it? What is your core identity? How do you want to be known? How do you identify? Now, all of us identify by names. And my identity comes from fathers. All three of my names, Daniel, that's my dad's grandpa and his family, was a last name. My middle name, Richard, came from my mom's dad. And then my last name, Miller, that's on my dad's side too. But it's not just our names. Like, our names are part of our identity, but how do you identify? Now, some of our identity is maybe in our relationships. Are you a father? That's part of your identity. Are you a sister? Are you a grandma? We have different identities. Maybe you identify with, like, another entity or team. Maybe you're a Purdue grad. Maybe, yeah, there's some of you. Maybe you identify as are you an Anderson grad? are you a Colts fan? Maybe you identify by a hobby. Are you a gardener? Are you a hunter? Are you a golfer? I mean, we have all these different ways of identifying ourselves. But we're talking about the core of our identity. How do we identify? Could be by a physical trait. Maybe you're tall. I got to be tall today. It was really nice. I liked it. I don't get that very often. Maybe you feel you're pretty. You're whatever. But we identify in all these different ways. And sometimes these side things can come to form our core identity. Our job, maybe you're a teacher or a barista or a farmer. These kind of things can come and form our identity. So as we think about that and think about what it was like for Jesus, I want to go to a story. And this is a time in Jesus' ministry. It's from Matthew 17. And this is kind of near the end of the ministry. Jesus had taken up three of his closest disciples, Peter, James, and John, a different John. And they went up on a mountain and they met with Moses. Somehow Moses and Elijah, they were there. They'd been gone a long time, but the Lord did something supernatural and they spoke to each other. And this is what happened when they spoke to each other. While he was still speaking, so there's a conversation going on, a bright cloud covered them. This is Jesus, the three disciples, and Moses and Elijah. And a voice from the cloud said, again, it's the voice of God, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." Have you heard that before? Did Jesus need to hear it again? Maybe. This is who God says he is. And then he says, listen to him. Jesus, at the core of his identity, was loved by God. Jesus operated that out of it. At the baptism, it was clear. That's the thing. Of all the things God could have said to Jesus, the voice could have said, of how he wanted him to be identified, it was beloved, pleasing. And here we have it near the end, too. Jesus lived out of that. Now, so that John who was with him, because he went by something else, he went by another identity. But he would write in the book of 1 John 4:15. He said this: if anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God. So what is John, this guy who was up on the mountain with Jesus, he spent 3 years at least with Jesus following him, he took care of Jesus' mom, Mary. What did that John say that we needed to do about Jesus? Acknowledge what? The Son. Out of all the things that John could have picked for us to acknowledge about Jesus, it was that Jesus is the Son. He identified as a son. Now, one of the best things that ever happened to me as a pastor was that my mom and dad, who live in Catlin, Illinois, decided to start coming to our church. This happened when I was a pastor in Frankfurt. And one of the things that happened that really I appreciated was that it started to humanize me. I wasn't just a pastor who came from nowhere and said a bunch of things people didn't like anymore. I had a mom and dad. I was a son. They could relate to that a little bit more. And my mom and dad were pretty nice to everybody too. So they didn't, I wasn't just a pastor to criticize anymore or whatever. Now I was somebody's son that they knew and liked, and they're nice, unless you start to be mean to their son. Any other parents like that? We're cool. You start being mean to my kids, we're not so cool anymore. So my parents were nice, unless somebody's maybe mean to their son or their daughter-in-law or their kids. And now we'd put Pastor Emily into that too. So my parents are going to be nice unless you violate those rules. But it can humanize. And that's how we are told to identify Jesus as the Son of God. Kind of funny, a couple weeks ago, John Hager, guy here, is out helping me at my house. And as he was out at my house helping, Jenny's mom came over. And she was coming over for something to the kids. And so John Hager and Jenny's mom were talking, and I was there. And John addressed me, and he said something about pastor. He called me pastor. And Jenny's mom looked at him and said, "You call him pastor?" And John thought that was so funny. Because to her, she knows I'm a pastor. It's not a huge secret. But I'm the guy that first came in as an interloper to steal her daughter from home. But now I've humanized myself some, and she's my mother-in-law, so I'm a kid. I'm not a pastor. She knows how human I am. And now, thanks to you, I brought her daughter back home to Indianapolis because you let me come here and invited me to come as a church. So thank you. So she likes me better now. It's the other sons-in-laws, hopefully, that are the interlopers. But that identity is Jesus as the Son. So let's go on to see what it says in 1 John 4:16. Next he wrote, "And so we know and rely on the love God has for us." Jesus operated out of this. He knew the Father had love for him. He relied on it. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. This is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. Jesus knew what it was like to be judged by people who thought he was unbiblical or whatever, thought he was breaking the rules and anti-God. They said lots of things about him. And we, in this world, this is how we can have confidence when we're judged in the day of judgment, because we're not being judged just on our merits, but we're like Jesus. We can identify ourselves with him. If we acknowledge the Son, we're with him. And that's how we stand. He stands over us. We can identify with him. We can merge our identity that we have with Jesus. In this world, we will be like Jesus. Goes on to write next in verse 18. "There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love." Our Father in heaven says it's perfect love that drives out fear. Fear is about punishment. And our Father is not this authoritarian who's bent on punishing. Sin punishes. The world can be difficult. But our Father in heaven, nah, he's not the punisher. Perfect love drives that out as we look to the love of the Father. Sin punishes, but our Father saves. And this means, as I think about my identity, I don't have to be eternally insecure, but I can identify with Jesus. That teenage fella who I talked about a little bit earlier, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. In case you don't know, he's my son. He's my son. He's up there waving at everyone. He's on the computer today. He hasn't cut me off yet, so thanks, Caleb. But it's kind of funny. Last summer, I was on sabbatical leave, and my son wanted to come here, and anytime there's an opportunity, he wanted to be here, be a part of it. Like, he loves this body so much. And I know, like, volunteering, he's volunteering today. But at the end of the year, we were talking about different awards just to acknowledge some people who do things that we're grateful for. And one of the ones was Caleb, my son. So we acknowledged Caleb for just a different award. And then he leaves, and I think mom or somebody was saying, hey, tell somebody about the award that you got. And he said, oh, yeah, at church, I won the nepotism award. I just got it because I'm the pastor's son. And you know what? I like that he thinks that even better than he thinks it's merit-based. Because there's probably a few other earthly fathers who want our kids to identify as the beloved who are pleasing. And if he thinks that, that's even better than winning some sort of silly award, right? The nepotism award. What if the Lord has a nepotism award in mind for you and that you're pleasing? We want our kids to identify. We want ourselves to identify with being loved and pleasing to God. It makes us want to go to him. 1 John 4:19, it says this. We love because he first loved us. It's so important as the Lord wants to try to drive this to the core of our identity. And we can operate out of that. We don't have to earn it. We can't perform well enough to do it. But we love when we come to understand we're like Jesus and we're loved and we're pleasing. And when we're connected to him, we can love right out of that. And it's powerful. We don't have to be afraid. We don't have to be motivated by fear. We'll all just do horrible things all the time. As we finish today, I just want to invite you to simply listen and believe what that 1 John, what he wrote in 1 John 3. We're going to ask our worship team to come up, and let's just listen to this as a prayer. That John, who was with Jesus on the mountain, who wrote a gospel about him, that John, he came to identify himself as John the Beloved. And it was really important as he wrote a gospel about Jesus that we understand that God is the one who loves. God is the one who looks to. And we can accept that love, and that can really drive us. So listen to this as we get ready to go out. See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are.